I also have some experience with retreats, a Christian retreat. And when I was in the States twice a year, or once or twice a year, my husband and I would go for a few days to the Benedictine monks. And then we had very good sermons about good speech and good behavior, morality, about humbleness, hospitality. And we found it helpful for our busy daily life when at work. But we had no idea that there were only different moments that do not last, like all the virtues and good speech. Only one moment and then it falls away. But we did not know, because we had not met Ajahn Sujin and did not hear about the Buddha's teachings. And this was really a bit superficial, because we think it helps, but actually it is more clinging to self and my good speech, my good virtues. And only the Buddha had a way to eradicate all that is unwholesome, all attachment, aversion, and ignorance. We did not even know about ignorance. So it depends on the individual whether he sees the danger of clinging to self, or whether he only wants a temporary help or relief. But this is not really helpful, because it's still a wrong view. And nobody knows what life will be in future, great loss or tribulations. But the Buddha taught what life truly is: fleeting moments, and nothing stays. And also he taught what ignorance is, ignorance of realities. Always ignorance arises. When it arises without lobha or dosa, it is with indifferent feeling, and people have no idea that there is ignorance. And also, they do not know about anusayas, or latent tendencies. There are latent tendencies of defilements, like among them is ignorance and wrong view, and clinging to sense objects, and they lay dormant in each citta. Each citta falls away, and then the next citta arises, and from moment to moment, all these latent tendencies are dormant in the citta. They don't arise, but at any time they can condition the arising of akusala citta. So it will be a big surprise when suddenly strong akusala citta arises. Where does it come from? The latent tendency is a condition for it to arise. And only the Buddha really explained about the latent tendencies. We cannot hear that from anyone else. And it helps us to see the danger of all defilements. And the Buddha taught this. And this is the greatest help and very precious. So we can begin now to know, like we often hear from Ajahn as a reminder, seeing now, hearing now, to understand that they are all just conditioned realities and non-self.
And yesterday evening, a few of us were having a discussion, including a friend, Lan, and Nina just mentioned that only the Buddha could teach us about realities which are anatta. But in our discussion yesterday evening, there was a suggestion that this is just one angle or one approach, and that different groups have different angles. So if we just say there are only the truths taught by the Buddha, some people may think this is not correct. And another point was when we talk about how there can be understanding anywhere, anytime, some friends may think, well, what about during practice? This is anywhere, anytime. There is still seeing or hearing. And one more point was that we cannot really talk about kusala and akusala, like understanding and metta, as being good and anger and attachment as bad, because it's just thinking and there may be attachment to that kind of thinking, and maybe it's useless to think more in that way. Would you like to elaborate, Lan? Is that a fair summary?
Achan, firstly, I would like to say that you have been describing perfectly about the realities. For the past few years, I only contact or communicate with Dhamma friends, and I have been spending all of my time for Dhamma. And I almost don't have contact with normal friend who don't have interest in the Dhamma. So the past few months, when I have during my work, I communicate with those people are not Dhamma friend. So I realize that I have had a lot of attachment to Dhamma, or the way of approaching everything by way of Dhamma, and somehow I didn't realize that somehow it create the difference between me and others. So it may even that for me it's helpful to approach everything, every problem by way of Dhamma. But when I apply it to communicate with other without with the different way of thinking, then somehow I may offend them, or it may cause crashing when contact with them. So
I think that we better not to talk about other things else besides whatever appears now. And no matter who says about it, it doesn't matter whether that person was named Buddha or who. Just talk about reality. And the good friend is the good and right words about reality right now. For example, there is seeing many, many movements in the day, all day long. No understanding of it. Yesterday and today and tomorrow, seeing arises by conditions. That's why we better understand reality as it is, to really understand that if there is no hearing about the truth of seeing, how can we think about it, even it arises and falls away from day to day, from morning to evening, from moment to moment? Is it not interesting to begin to understand it, because it's here and now, and there's no understanding of it? So there is the idea of I see in one's life, and that is right or wrong, because actually if seeing does not arise, can there be any moment of I see? If hearing does not arise at all, can be any moment of I hear? So what happens in one's life are conditioned reality, but ignorance and the wrong understanding which takes that which is not permanent at all as I from moment to moment. So what is the truth? What is true? What should we be talking about right now?
For me, I feel a lot of helpful or beneficial by way of Dhamma.
Don't talk, call it Dhamma on anything at all. Just now what appears, and can we have understanding of it as it is? Because there's no understanding from morning, every day. It arises all days, but no understanding of it. Can there be the understanding of it as it is? Otherwise, it passes on and on all day without any understanding of it. Is it interesting to know, to understand seeing which now appears? Or that shouldn't be studied at all?
I have been used to it or familiar with that.
With what?
With seeing or hearing or...
Yes, there is seeing now. What's the truth of it? Is there any truth at the moment when there is no attention, no understanding at all? It arises and falls away because what it's seen changed from moment to moment unknowingly. So the seeing also arises and falls away because it experiences only an object at a time. So is it not interesting to understand more and more? What is more interesting? What is more interesting? So we can share whether what is worth thinking about it.
But the habit or way of thinking all the time approaching everything from the by the Dhamma way, it may cause...
Don't call it Dhamma way, because we don't talk about Dhamma, we talk about the truth. The truth is the truth.
Yeah, because I have to call it approaching by the Dhamma way, because I want to talk.
What is
talk.
The Dhamma way?
As we have been used to that about the reality or a right understanding or what Buddha taught or about Buddha's teaching.
So you call it, this is Dhamma way, right? And what way is not Dhamma way?
I mean, for all of us, if we only communicate with this community, so we will not see that the crashing or the conflict it may be so, when we communicate with others, so, which with a different
so
way
please,
of thinking.
Please talk about the other ways so that we can hear what are the other ways. That is seeing right now. So what is the other way?
When all the time I reflect everything by the Dhamma way, then with other I may create tension.
Let's talk
to others.
About a reality or a Dhamma at a time. Is that I who is talking?
I can easily answer you that there's no I. But
to be honest, it's not just by theory. Not according to me, about the truth, what you take for I.
Achan, I think that for those who have been enlightened, so they talk about the reality, they can describe about the reality, but for those who are not... We haven't enlightened.
Yeah.
So for us,
yes.
We just receive new information to build a new perception.
But what about listen to those words from the enlightenment?
So we have been listened, and then we easily say the answer right or wrong, richly, easily, but just that because we have been heard.
Yes, but to know right and wrong, it has to be this moment. When we talk about seeing, is seeing right or wrong? of seeing is a reality, it's real at this moment. Can you say that it's wrong to hear about these words?
Achan, it is right. It is reality, but at one moment, it arises and falls away immediately. So why do we hold on it to analyze about that completely on already?
See, arises and falls away. Is that true?
I believe.
Can it become object of enlightenment, understanding fully about that which now sees, arises and falls away? Is it any way to understand it, or just leave it, ignore it, then know about it? The whole life, from birth to death, no understanding of it any at all. But there are words which can help one to understand whatever appears out, and it would be object of considering the truth of it, not to believe, but what is true, because seeing is not hearing, and hearing is not thinking. Are they true?
I agree with you, and I must say it's beautiful.
Yesterday evening.
You've told us your way of living over the previous few years and some comments. I wonder if there's been a misunderstanding about the Dhamma way, because you mention associating only with Dhamma friends and not mixing in the ordinary community and this sort of thing. This is not the Dhamma way. The Dhamma way is development of understanding of any reality appearing now.
What I mean is, I hope you understand that when we all have the same interests or the same way of thinking, then it will be no problem among all of us. But when we contact with others with different way of thinking,
Well, that's not the case, because there's no conflict or tension between meeting and speaking to other people who have a different way of thinking. It happens all the time. It's normal daily life. To try to construct a daily life that is in accordance with your idea of what are the ideal conditions for the development of understanding is a wrong approach. And that is where the problem lies. The problem is not in the teaching. The problem is not in the understanding of Dhammas in daily life. The problem is trying to lead a life that we think is ideal for the understanding of Dhamma, wrongly thinking that. Because we cannot control who we meet, the views of other people that we meet in a day. And to think that we can control that is wrong thinking. So life goes on normally. That's the key thing, naturally, not just meeting certain people and not others, or going to certain places, not others, avoiding busy cities or places of entertainment or anything like that. That's a wrong view of what are the conditions for developing understanding. Nothing to do with time or place or people that we meet in daily life. Association with a good friend doesn't mean limiting our contact to people who have the same way of thinking as we do, because it can't be controlled. That's the problem. The same question came up yesterday with the bhikkhunis sitting in front of us at the moment. Not our friends in robes, thinking that by adopting certain robes and associating only with people of similar inclination, that is the best condition for developing understanding. It's not necessarily so. The proper reason for living a lifestyle that rejects the home life is the accumulation to do so, finding the home life dusty and crowded, as the Buddha put it.
I agree with you, but maybe you were not in my situation or in the communication as I had So you may not understand about that. But let me tell you that...
But I understand what you mean when you say approaching everything by the Dhamma way. There is no such thing as approaching everything by the Dhamma way. There is only the development of understanding in daily life.
Maybe it's just a different expression?
I don't think so. I think what you mean is you're trying to construct your life according to your image or thinking of the ideal Buddhist layperson. That's what you mean by approaching everything in the Dhamma way, because you said when you speak to people who don't have the same understanding, it causes offense or tension in the other person. How could that be?
Because let's say I will always talk about seeing, hearing, or...
Yeah, but why when you meet someone who has no interest in the Dhamma would you talk to that person about seeing and hearing? When you go into a shop to buy something, you don't start talking about seeing and hearing.
Or something happened and then just say that it's no one there or it's not yours.
Is it helpful to that person to say that? If they haven't heard anything about the Dhammas?
Because somehow...
You say you meet someone and something happens and you say to them that there's no you. Well, they think you're crazy. Because they have no understanding of no way of realizing the meaning of that.
So I have shared what I think is helpful, is beneficial, but for others it may become offended or...
Well, one has to know the right time and place. Even the Buddha, when teaching the Dhamma, didn't launch into a description of realities immediately, necessarily. Depending on the accumulations of the listener. Sometimes he started with other things.
Yeah, so...
Including their daily situation and their problem in life.
Yeah, so when there's some problem with them and I may give them the solution by the Dhamma solution, but for them it's...
There's no such thing as a Dhamma solution to problems. It's wrong thinking to think that this is the way to interact with other people who have never heard the Dhamma. And I know you think it's a helpful thing, perhaps, but you can see that it's not really. If the person just takes offense, then it has no relevance. I remember when a colleague of mine got sick and was in hospital, I went to visit him and I thought his condition was quite serious, which in fact it was, and I tried to explain to him about the inevitability of death or something like that, or death can come at any moment. I forget what, but it wasn't appropriate.
Yeah.
He didn't appreciate it. It made him upset. And I realized that I need to be a bit careful about what I say, to whom, and on what situation.
Yeah, thanks for understanding.
Right. Just to come back to what you were saying, I think it's a good thing that you came to the conclusion that the way you were living was not really working. Trying to live the Dhamma way, trying to follow the Dhamma approach in everything, it's not wholesome and it doesn't bring any ease of life.
Yeah, I realize the same, that any...
But the problem is not the teaching. Do not throw out the teaching on understanding of realities at the present moment just because you were approaching it incorrectly in the first place. Right, thanks.
That is one point. And the other point is now, like yesterday evening when I said to you, is there seeing now? As Ajahn said, we don't have to call it Dharma way or anything else. But when I said, is there seeing now? Your answer was, I can just repeat it, but I cannot say there is seeing now, and that we give too much emphasis to understanding and that there's no point thinking about these realities. So when you say that it's beautiful, is it beautiful to hear and understand about realities, or what is beautiful? So it's good to hear about realities. And can we say that it doesn't matter what one's background or what other ideas one has, if there is hearing and considering about the truth at this moment, what is real at this moment, that is very precious and useful.
In terms of consideration, I'm not so sure, but I may think somehow it's like an intentional action or doing, and it may become a habit, which for me any habit would be somehow the idea of something last for a certain time, which is not that just one moment.
Is it better to have a habit of unwise thinking as usual about life, or a habit of wise reflection about realities and life?
Currently, I think own habit is the same.
So no difference at all between kusala habits and akusala habit, both as
because once there is a habit, then is it conflict with what you often emphasize, that's not trying to do something?
Like now, if I ask you, is there seeing now, is there hearing now, considering life at this moment, what is real at this moment in life, does there have to be any conflict or any wrong understanding? There can be if one tries to catch it. But reflecting about life as just existing at this moment through one doorway or other, this is at moments of wise reflection. This is understanding, no idea of I am doing anything. This is the development of a good habit. Is that right or not?
You haven't made me get rid of what I still think about all the habit is the same, and you mentioned good or bad habits, so somehow it still has the idea of comparison. So behind that, there must be attachment to something. That's why you say that something is good and the other thing is not good.
If we say that anger is unwholesome and metta is wholesome, is that right or not right? Is it the same?
Do we need to... anger has its own characteristic, so do we need to say it good or bad?
Is the characteristic of anger, is it a wholesome characteristic or an unwholesome characteristic? Did the Buddha teach that it's kusala or akusala?
Is that the Buddha teach about its own characteristic without saying that it's good or bad?
Did the Buddha say it was because akusala? Did he say anger is akusala, that it's harmful because at that moment there's no metta, no kindness? Did he say that?
Maybe harmful can be understand in the sense of its effect or its influence, that it can be harmful.
Some habits accompanied by restlessness, and others by calm. Some habits accompanied by restlessness. And other habits accompanied by calm.
As you say so, then I remember that I have been always in tension or stressful when I have to consider about.
It seems being that in the hot seat is stressful. Yes.
It is.
Right. But nevertheless, we're not talking about being in the hot seat now, we're just talking about generally. Anger is accompanied by restlessness, isn't it? And what we call wholesome moments, which you don't like to call them that, but there are other moments of habit that are calm and peaceful, no restlessness.
the thing to, for you to attach on?
Not to be attached to, no. Just talk, we're talking about the way things are.
Yes?
Yes.
Is habit, no matter what, good or bad, or...
Yeah, habitual tendencies are habitual tendencies. When we talk about habit, what do we mean? We mean the same kind of mental state, mental factors arising again and again.
So behind that, is there an idea, maybe unintentionally or unconsciously, that you select what you want to develop?
Not in what I've said so far, because I'm just saying that when we talk about habit, we mean the same mental tendencies arising repeatedly. That's just clarifying what you mean by habit.
But somehow it will be selection.
What will be selection?
Because...
You mean habit will be selection?
No, what you want to develop.
We haven't got to that yet. We're just clarifying what you mean by habit. The same mental tendency arising again and again. Right. Now, sometimes that mental tendency will be accompanied by restlessness. For example, when there's anger or a dislike. And other times, it'll be accompanied by calm. That's all. Okay? Right. So shall we go on to development? Right. Can the different moments be known? Moments of restlessness, can they be known as moments with restlessness? And the moments accompanied by calm be known as moments accompanied by calm? Is that possible?
It's possible.
And are they known as that or not? Or do we not yet know those characteristics as they appear? For example, at the present moment, do we know if it's moment with restlessness or moment with calm? For you in the hot seat, it's easy, restlessness. But generally speaking, in other times of the day, do we know?
We do. Yeah.
So it's easy to tell, is it, whether the present habit or habitual tendency that is arising is accompanied by restlessness or by calm? Would you say it's easy to know? Or is it possible that there is subtle restlessness that we might take for calm, for example?
I haven't got your idea.
We're talking about moments of what you call habit, habitual tendency, that are with restlessness or with calm. Can they be known? We've agreed they can be known as they are. But are they known now as they are? Or do we live mostly in ignorance of whether it's a restlessness type of habitual tendency or a calm type of habitual tendency that is arising?
Being known or not being known is also arise by condition, and it also
yes.
falls away.
Yes.
So right. Is that your... somehow like to create the habit of being...
Not talking about creating any habit.
No.
Talking about the possibility of knowing one and the other and whether that level of understanding has yet been developed. And let me just say that if it is known as it is, then that can be called development. When calm arises, if the moments with calmness are known as moments with calmness, that is a kind of development. But it's not trying to do anything. We can't know them by trying to know them. But as you say, whether it's known or not is conditioned. But if there is a moment of knowing the moment with calmness, then that is the development of that. Seeing now is the thinking, or is the habitual tendency associated with that seeing, is it with restlessness or with calm?
If you on bring back everything to reality as usual, then I would completely agree with you.
Well, is it helpful to bring things back to presently arising realities?
For me, it sometimes it may be necessary to step out a bit to see what else.
But that's only thinking, isn't it? When you talk about stepping back to see what else,
you may say so.
That's certainly one kind of trying. You have the idea of stepping back to see what else.
You may say so.
What would you call it?
But for me, it was helpful. And the effect is that I even felt I understand more what you are saying.
I see. So what is the reality of this stepping back to see what else?
The object will be different from what we have been used to.
Sorry, I missed that. Say again.
Object may be different from what we have been used to.
Could you give an example?
If all the time we think in terms of seeing, hearing, then and somehow we may not realize that a moment which is the Dhamma just contacting and then fallen away already, but somehow we still hold it on and analyze it.
I have a question. Can anyone select an object? Can anyone hold on to an object? Can anyone analyze an object?
No.
Why not?
Because there's no one.
So it's just an illusion that anyone can select an object or hold on, because there are only different realities which arise by conditions, not in anyone's control or selection. Is that correct?
It also can be illusion. When we have an experience, then we just say about reality as we perceive.
Whether or not there has been any direct understanding of realities, is it true that there are only realities arising by conditions? No one who can do anything, no one who can step back, no one who can analyze, no one who can hold on.
I agree with you. You don't need to say that someone is stepping back or someone withdraw.
So now there is only seeing which arises by conditions, which sees what is visible, and thinking arises by conditions in a wholesome way or unwholesome way, not in anyone's control. No one can stop thinking after seeing. Is that correct?
Sarah, you have been very firm and sharp understanding. But may I ask you, is there any side effect or the other? Or the other side of being sharp or firm understanding, it can be rigidity to a way of approaching or to a view or an opinion.
If there is any understanding of what is true and right, then does that understanding lead to what is beneficial or does it lead to bad effects?
Is it the middle way when we think in terms of duality?
When we think in terms of
duality, like good or bad, or effective or non-effective, or beneficial or non-beneficial?
Did the Buddha talk about the middle way as the development of understanding of whatever is real, including seeing, including visible object, including anger, including metta? Did he say that some dharmas, some realities are wholesome and some are unwholesome? Or did he just say they're all the same and no need to compare and no need to talk about different realities? Why did he teach for 45 years in detail about so many different realities?
I think speaking in terms of those pairs of duality, then somehow it's just like an education.
Let's talk about just a reality at a time, right? Or you would like to talk about many things. It cannot be clear understanding if you just talk of many, many things at once, because there is little understanding of even what appears now. For example, you have heard the word seeing is real. Is it real? Enough to know or better understand how real it is. No one there, what now? There are many people see. So how can it be directly experienced as not self at all? Because it's not just saying it's not self, that's not enough. There must be the development of understanding to be sure what is real. So seeing cannot be anyone at all, right? Can it?
Seeing itself only.
Seeing itself cannot be anyone. It's a reality because it now appears, right? Should we know better and better, more and more, not just thinking that it's real, that's all?
It did work, but it didn't work when I keep on considering about it.
No, we don't think about I or anyone, keep on. We're talking about seeing. And at moment of seeing arises, it's real, only at moment of its arising. Before that, there's no seeing. And after seeing, there's no seeing. So seeing is real at moment when it appears, when it arises. Not fall away yet. But no one can stop seeing from falling away at all. But is that right? So that one can continue on, not just think that it's right, but can it be directly experienced to be sure? More confidence and more confidence of that which is not self, as it cannot be anything at all besides just seeing. Or just stop and understanding as simple as Israel. No self. But there are many people in this room, here, garden, everything. So when we talk about just seeing, at moment of seeing, is there anything else appearing?
Seeing?
It should be better and better, deeper and deeper understood, in order to have confidence of not just saying that seeing is real, that's not enough. Seeing is not permanent, that is not enough. So it should be understood more than this. You said it's so beautiful because one is talking about what is real, right? But it would be more and more beautiful when right understanding develops and realize that how true it is from just hearing, seeing is real, into, onto the moment when it's so real because of it arises and falls away and there's no one at moment of seeing. As there is no one at moment of hearing, no people at moment of hearing, no seeing things at moment of hearing, so hearing is real and it's not seeing. Hearing arises by conditioned, by conditions. It's conditioned to arise. Nobody can make it arise at all. That's enough to know. That's not enough to know. Because it can be known more than that, more beautiful than that. That all the words that we heard from the enlightened one, so true, that anyone would like to experience, because seeing the benefit of living in this world from birth up to the moment when there is no hearing of the teachings at all, one speaks without any understanding of what is spoken at all. Just we talk about that which is not known of its reality until there's a hearing of the Buddha or the words of truth, if we don't want to name anyone, the words of truth that is so true that the only way to be able to understand it better and better is to hear more about it. Is that not true? Only one way to hear more, not just jump to practice what? No understanding at all. So from hearing more and more, it conditions moment, which is the moment of understanding reality directly. Because now we just talk about seeing. It's not direct understanding of any seeing at all. We just talk about seeing in order to understand that seeing is real, but no one knows about its truth, not permanent. It cannot belong to anyone because it's gone completely. Whatever arises and falls away, never to return, can that be anyone or belong to anyone or can be anything? It's just nothing. Before there is seeing, there's no seeing. And after seeing, there's no seeing. So life is like this, no matter seeing, hearing, feeling, memory, like, dislike, whatever. Otherwise, the clinging to the idea of self conditions selfishness. Everything just for me, for oneself. And when it's stronger, it conditions such ill deeds which harms the other. Killing, stealing, and so forth. In order to have none of this level of reality arise, there should be only understanding more and more that it's just reality. Each one is a reality, different from the others. And there are more to hear about it in order to have firm confidence on the truth. Otherwise, it's only seeing is not self. That's all. That's not enough.
You describe the reality perfectly, Ajahn. Can I ask you that somehow confidence or we still have something to take refuge? Is that somehow some tie up?
By whom?
No need to be relevant to anyone, but itself. There's something to rely on or to put confidence on or to take refuge on, so it's been being tied.
Understanding understands this moment and it will grow little by little to understand better and better. No one tries at all. When it's wrong, it's the wrong understanding which tries so hard to understand that which is now appearing. But it's wrong understanding of self. And when you talk about confidence, confidence in the truth or confidence of what?
Yes, it's confidence about the truth, but because we haven't experienced the truth, so...
Not we. Just talk about the truth and reality. Because now one begins to understand that actually there is no self, no one, no thing at all, because everything is not permanent in 3 seconds. Who knows now? Seeing arises and falls away. There is thinking, follow, and then hearing, and then... many realities from one moment to another moment, who knows? but it's there, different ones.
Can anyone experience the truths?
How is correctly described about that?
So because you said, you talked about anyone experiencing the truths, what experiences the truth?
So please correct me. I would like to ask Ajahn more.
So what experiences the truth? This is the question. Because you mentioned that we put too much emphasis on understanding. So if it's not understanding, who or what experiences the truth?
I mean, not at the level, the theoretical level.
Even at the beginning level, who or what experiences the truths? Who even understands theoretically about the truths?
Of course, no one.
So only understanding. So it's only the development of understanding that can realize anything. It's only the development of understanding that brings more confidence in the truths. Is that correct?
But I mean that the truth is then just an idea about the truth. It's not on quality, or it's not on characteristic.
So what is the reality of an idea? If there's no reality, can there be any idea? So what kind of reality that you take for idea? Is there idea now?
I think idea is just an illusion, so it cannot be real to have its own characteristic. Am I right?
So is there idea now?
A lot.
A lot. Is idea seeing?
Of course not.
Is idea the hearing? So what is the reality that it's an idea? See is not idea. Hearing is not idea. Smelling is not idea. Tasting is not idea. Feeling is not idea. Like or dislike is not idea. So what reality that you take for an idea?
Is that right? That seeing or hearing is just expression of the truth, but itself is not complete. The truth.
Seeing does have any idea at all.
But the truth is not only seeing.
So what is idea?
It's just an illusion.
Is illusion seeing?
No, of course not.
That's why we have to understand each reality as it is, in order to see that actually there is no self at all in reality. At all. Whatever you take for this or that must be different qualities of different realities, that's all. If we don't know what an idea is, how can we understand idea as not self? No self at all. So when you talk about idea, idea is not self. So what is it? This is the development of right understanding, beginning to consider what one takes for self from birth to death.
Is this understanding of what is true? When we talk about different realities such as seeing now, what is seen that is visible?
I think it's not complete.
What else is needed?
I don't know yet.
Is there anything else apart from the realities of life now?
You may say that only what experienced through the sense.
And what about those realities which experience the objects through the senses? Are they real? Like
together,
seeing and
together.
Hearing? I can say so, or is it true?
It is true, but maybe not complete.
Okay, so other realities experiencing through the mind door, moments of thinking, moments of attachment, moments of aversion, are they true? Are they realities?
If.
And is attachment and aversion the same?
Is that, are you giving those any?
We're talking because you said it's not complete, so we're talking about other realities. We're talking about, as Ajahn said, in order to really understand that realities are not self, we have to hear and consider about many different realities.
Would you like to understand seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, or whatever is better and better? Is that not your interest?
If I have the idea that I want to understand better and better, is that somehow that I want to get something or gain some?
It depends. Because one realizes that one does not understand anything at all about whatever appears. That's the reason to see the benefit of better understanding than not understanding at all. Because life is so short, when can there can be such moment to be able to hear more and understand more about whatever appears? Otherwise, it's gone with ignorance all the time, as before. If there is no way to understand at all, then it's impossible to understand. But when there is a way to develop understanding of it little by little to understand more and more, then it would be firm confidence on no self. Because now it's not firm. It's only I who hear and think about ways, different ways to understand. But actually, what is right, and what is wrong. One must be very truthful to the truth. Otherwise, they cannot get the understanding from the words that one heard at all. One just think about in one's own way all the time, not hearing right words, which can be heard very rarely if it's not the right conditions. It's not for everyone to hear it. So it's time to understand better and better about whatever appears.
I totally agree that it is helpful and beneficial for me. It has been. But may I ask you, Ajahn, that once we seen bad in our mind, that something is wrong and something is right, then it may cause conflict when we contact with those they don't have the same mindset to say that this is the same thing is wrong and the same thing is right.
Because of the idea of self is still there. But when there's more and more understanding, it becomes clearer and clearer that actually it's a moment of thinking. Besides seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, there must be thinking all day long. And thinking cannot be anyone at all. It's conditioned to arise and fall through like all conditioned realities. Same length.
So when there's an idea of self, like we were discussing yesterday, it seems that this situation is not favorable to the Dharma, and this situation is favorable or like in the mountain it's better, or somewhere else it's not, or if we're with people who don't have understanding of dharmas, there's some conflict, but not when we're with friends. But when there's more understanding, one learns what is meant more about being a nobody. And then it matters less where we are, who we're with, because the development of understanding leads to wholesome qualities like metta. So whoever we're with, it leads to less conflict, not more conflict, because there's more understanding of the others and their accumulations, more kindness, more helpfulness, no matter what their idea are, no matter where we are. We don't think that we need to be in the quiet place, or we need to be just with friends who think about Dharma. That's what Ajahn means by all the idea of self.
I don't mind about the place or people, because actually I have learned a lot from those people with different mindset. And
so we understand people with different mindset according to their needs and their interest. If they are only interested in talking about flowers, okay, out of metta one can talk about flowers with them. If they are interested in talking about another religion, okay, we can listen to what they say. We don't have to think of ourselves all the time. It's only when we think of ourselves all the time that there is conflict and problems. When one doesn't think of oneself and one's really concerned for the interest of others, no conflict.
Yeah, that's right.
It doesn't mean that the truths are any different. It doesn't mean that there isn't the understanding that it's only seeing now that's anatta. That doesn't mean that it's more difficult to be with others. The opposite. Because one knows there is confidence that whatever dharma arises, it's by conditions. No one chooses to be here or there. No one chooses to have attachment or aversion. But these are different realities arising by different conditions with different characteristics. So understanding leads to more kusala of all kinds. So it's helpful to understand what is kusala. It's helpful to understand the difference between metta, when one's really concerned for others' welfare, and selfishness, when one's thinking about oneself, for example. It's so beneficial in life. And it leads to less and less conflict, and as Ajahn said yesterday, to living more easily and relaxed, no matter where, no matter what, no matter who one associates with.
What is the Dhamma way, and what should we understand by living the Dhamma way?
Always relevant to seeing, hearing, or understanding of kusala, akusala, and so on.
Any dhamma that is arising can be object of understanding or awareness, but it doesn't mean living any particular lifestyle.
Oh, somehow are we living in a lifestyle now?
We are, but after we leave this meeting, or after we end this series of discussions, this session, on the 15th of February, what about the lifestyle then? Does it have to be a special lifestyle?
Somehow it's been like this, I think.
What do you mean like this?
The way of thinking, or the object of thinking?
Right, exactly. The object of thinking and the way of thinking, that is the same habitual tendencies, like and dislike, occasional moments of wholesome thinking. But does it matter whether we are following a livelihood, or meeting Dhamma friends, or going to the movies? Does that make any difference? Is that significant to the development of understanding or any aspect of living the Dhamma way?
I think once we have a certain style of living, have a favorite friends or community which we want to contact, so we are it is attachment to a small group or those who are those with the same interest, and that is attachment. It will not be free.
Perhaps we'll change to a different topic because other people have points. Okay, let's start with Sun because it's so hard to catch him. So just starting off on the topic of samatha and calm, and you were asking about, is there a practice? Would you like to repeat your question for Ajahn, and then maybe Gung and Graham can bring in their discussion on calm and samatha also?
Okay, thank you, Sarah. I understand that samatha is the reality too. So it arises by condition. So I would like to know what is the condition for samatha to arise.
Do you know calm already enough?
Yes, in theory.
So what is calm?
Calm is when there is no kalisa.
So ignorance, attachment, aversion, and other unwholesomeness.
Yes.
And who can know calm?
Understand.
So, not I, not you, but there is a reality which understands.
Yes.
At any moment when there is understanding, there should be the not forgetful that it's not I, it's a reality.
Yes.
The teachings of the Buddha are the words of truth beginning from all realities are not self. They cannot be, they cannot arise at will, and it has to be as it's conditioned. Like seeing must be the reality which is by conditions, makes it seeing. By condition, hearing is here. It's hearing, it cannot be other thing else by conditions. So when we talk about calm, can calm be built up by the I or the self?
No, I understand that calm and like seeing samatha, all that reality arise by condition. But my question is, what is the condition for each reality to arise? For example, understand. The condition for understand to arise is to hear the right teaching, or the seeing is arise with each condition, like the seeing has its condition. We know the condition, but my question is the condition for samatha. Yeah, like. The understanding has its condition, like hearing the right teaching.
So calm is also conditioned.
Yes.
What is conditions for calm to arise?
Here is my question. I don't ask if I know.
Calm with panya or calmness without panya. See, they are so different kind of calmness.
Yes.
Because calmness without panya is any moment of kusla, like dana or sila, or generosity, helping the others. There's no calm. There's no right understanding.
Yes.
That's why no matter how much one is so good, but no understanding, it's impossible to have understanding of the moment which is not self. So it's not parami, it's not perfections, it's not the development of life which will one day be the moment of understanding reality as it is. That's why not just understanding the calmness is any moment of kusala, that's not enough. Because at this moment there should be understanding of whatever appears as calm or not.
Understanding what kind of yes is calm.
Is the calm now?
Sometimes. when he was reminded, it's calm.
From hearing and thinking, but it's not precisely experienced yet.
Yes.
So all realities are talked about, but not unknown by just talking about. It must be moment of directly understand with right awareness that that cannot be self or anything at all, even calmness. So there are many realities and there are wholesome jetasikas which are calm, no matter it's what, like non-attachment at that moment is calm because it's not attached. No aversion at that moment is calm because there's no aversion. No ignorance at that moment is calm because there's no ignorance. That's why it needs panya to develop on to the degree that it can arise with right awareness of right object and understand it as a self from the previous conditions of learning a lot, hearing a lot. Otherwise, there are no conditions for that moment to arise, which can know exactly the moment of calm. Because we just talk about calm. What is calm? Does it arise now? But it's not the moment when it really directly understand that with direct awareness and understanding it's not me, it's just a reality which is calm. That's why the teachings of the Buddha, there are altogether three levels. Intellectual level, which is like we're talking about, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting. But when it's firm confidence on the truth of it, more and more, with right understanding, no expectation, no speculation, because whatever arises depends on its appropriate conditions. So the moment when it's direct awareness of a reality at that moment, one knows that it's so anatta. No one can make it rise, but the accumulation of understanding of that condition, that moment. Otherwise, there wouldn't be such moment at all. That's why now we are accumulating little by little the understanding of whatever appears so that it can be moment of higher understanding, which is the patipatti, not just intellectual understanding.
What Ajahn was saying before, so at any moment of wholesomeness, for example, at a moment of generosity or a moment of kindness or a moment of paying respect, at those moments the citta is calm, the quality of calmness arises, pasadi cetasika arises with that citta at those moments of wholesomeness. But it's not the development of calm, it's not samatha bhavana, they are just moments of calm arising with those cittas. But I think you were asking about samatha bhavana, so for it to be the development of calm, there has to be understanding of the quality of calmness, as Jonathan was saying earlier. It's the opposite of disturbance or restlessness. At moments of attachment, the citta is not calm. So there has to be understanding of what calm is, and there has to be understanding of what the object of calm is and how it brings about the development of calm. And at those moments, there has to be the seeing the danger of attachment as usual to sense objects. But it's not a practice or a method, because no one can do anything, no matter whether there's any understanding of realities as not self or not. No one can do anything. No one can practice.
Yes.
I think this is what you've all been discussing.
Yes, so in brief, samadhi, we have samadhi with understanding, that is we can call vipassana, and samadhi without understanding, and samadhi is calm without understanding, come together with kusala, kusala deeds. So, develop the samadhi without understanding can be through the kusala, but developing the calmness with understanding must be the hearing the right teaching. Yes, so in brief, we can understand like this.
When we talk about calmness, are we talking about calmness in daily life or the practicing of calm?
No, I talk about the reality calm.
Daily life.
No, daily life. I talk about the reality.
He's talking about bhavana.
I talk about the condition for samatha to be arise.
Samatha is the word for calmness.
Yes.
And calmness in daily life is moment of kusala.
Yes.
But it's not strong and often enough to appear the characteristic of calm or tranquility. That's why no one knows, because at moment of listening and hearing there is calm, it's not known. But there is also the development of calmness, which is samatha bhavana. Bhavana is the development of calm. It means that in the Buddha time, people had developing calm to the higher degree, jhana, different levels of jhana. Are we talking about that too?
Yes.
Not daily? So the question is, why do you want to develop calmness like people in the Buddha time?
No, I just want to
understand
the different characteristics of calmness and the condition
so
for
now,
that reality to be arise.
Now you know that those people who developed calm in the Buddha time had more understanding than us. Because they know how to be more calm, more and more calmness, right? Even before the Buddha's time, before the Buddha enlightenment. So there must be the development of calmness. But why? Why did they do that? Or today, anyone who'd like to sit and want to be calm, why? There must be the reason. Whether it's right or wrong reason.
They would like, I guess that they would like to have more calm, to have more, how can I say, more calm for oneself, to not have kalisa, have not.
Attachment condition calmness? So wanting to have calm, can it bring about calmness?
No.
So it cannot be wanting to have calm and then there's calm. But those people or anyone, no matter the time of Buddha or now, those who see the danger of attachment to sensuous object all day long, see that it's useless to have more and more attachment and all akusala each day. And they understand what condition calm, what object. It's not flower, it's not food, but it has to be right object for the development of calmness, that calmness can develop. Yes. So what is the right object?
I don't know.
For right condition, to be right condition for right calmness. Because people today just want something special from daily life. I don't know what they want to. Nothing or whatever, without any understanding. So without any understanding, it brings the happenings which is not from understanding at all. So the question is, what's that? How can it come to be such and such? See? And that cannot be the development of calmness at all. Because even calmness itself needs right understanding of calm. Because it has no attachment to calm, but by seeing the danger of the attachment to sensuous object and whatever in life, and they have only the understanding that it shouldn't be like that anymore. So from that wisdom, out of their wisdom, they know what object can be object of calmness. Do you know? So no way to develop calmness.
We're talking about calmness, and we've said that the mental factor of calmness arises with every moment of kusala. So if we're interested to know about the development of calmness, it's the same as the development of kusala. We've also said that when kusala arises, it accumulates. But that is not the same as saying it is developed. What's the difference? Kusala is developed when there is a level of understanding that understands the calmness of the moment or the conditions for that calmness. It's understanding, but it's not understanding of the level of satipatthana. It doesn't know anything about the characteristic of reality, but it knows the quality of calmness. That is the development of calmness. It is developed when it arises, like kusala. Let's call it development of kusala because it's easier to understand. Kusala cannot be made to arise. It arises by conditions. So we cannot willfully develop kusala. But kusala does arise naturally in daily life. It arises, but it's not known as moments of kusala. So it's by knowing those moments when they arise that it is developed.
Sorry, we are talking about the object of the calmness, right? I'm still confused about the object for that. Either it's the reality, object for the, I mean...
Object of calmness becomes relevant if one is talking about the higher stages of development, but not as far as daily life is concerned. So any moment of kusala is a moment of calmness.
Understanding, right? I mean, kusala arises with understanding, right?
No. Understanding is the highest level of kusala. But kusala is other moments of wholesomeness, such as dana, sila, consideration, respect. Restraint from unwholesomeness is a moment of kusala.
So at that kind of moment, there's also be the calmness
exactly.
At the low level of that.
Exactly.
So there are two kinds of understanding. There is understanding which understands about realities at different levels, starting with Pariyatti, Patipatti, Pativeda. And there's understanding at the level or the kind of Samatha Bhavana. So understanding in the development of Samatha Bhavana is not the understanding of reality. It's the understanding of how particular object can condition calm. It's the understanding of the danger of attachment to sense objects, not the understanding of reality as anatta. That's why even before the Buddha taught, many people at that time had highly developed Samatha Bhavana, understanding of calm and the object that could bring calm to a very high level of jhana, no attachment to sense objects. But at that level, the attachment is suppressed, not eradicated. So this is a different kind of understanding. And now in daily life, many moments of kusala, and at the moments of kusala, any kind of kusala, the citta is calm, there is calmness. And there can even be moments of understanding of calm, like now. There can be wise reflection on how life is so short, just a moment, and death can come any time now. So what is precious in this life? And at that moment of reflection on death, if it's wholesome, the citta is calm. There can be understanding how that object, that reflection on death, conditions calm at this moment. So even though there is some understanding, but it's not yet development because they are just occasional moments of understanding the object of calm.
Okay, I think we are talking about the reality of the calm or calmness, right? We are not trying to be calm or something like that. So, as you mentioned that at the moment of the generosity, maybe at that moment there's no understanding and no lobha and no dosa as well. At that set level of the calm as well, right?
Yes.
But no any understanding, no any level of understanding yet.
At that moment of thinking of the other's needs, helping the others, even if there's no understanding, at that moment of kindness or generosity, there is calmness. The citta is calm. There's no disturbance, no conflict, no restlessness at that moment of kindness, but no understanding about it. It's just by habit, by tendency, there are those moments of kusala, of kindness or consideration and calmness that has become a habit at those moments naturally. But in order for calm to be developed, there has to be understanding.
Aysen, yesterday I believe you were wondering like for higher levels of development of samatha, when there's the undertaking of a formal object, is that considered like a method? Is that right? Was that your question?
In fact, my question, my concern is not the methods to develop, but is the I would not like the ask about the condition only for the reality to be arise. And
have we covered that now?
No.
You still
only understand the condition for that, but you can. There is no eye to catch. There is no eye to create the condition.
Has the
like
discussion clarified the answer to your question? Are you clearer now on what are the conditions?
Yes.
Yes.
I clearer now, but I still wonder how they can separate such level of calmness like level one jhana. So. Because it is the same level, so how?
Oh, you're jumping now from daily life to jhana, are you? No, this is. We're getting to the point. Is that it?
And like Suan remembered, I also thought that yesterday evening you were asking about if those who had attained jhana followed a method or practice something, and we discussed how any reality, even moments of samatha bhavana or jhana, or just like seeing or hearing, actually they just arise by conditions, not by anyone's will. So as I was mentioning to Lana, we were discussing, no matter whether there's any understanding or not, no one can ever select an object, no one can practice, no one can follow a method, no one can do anything at all, even regardless of whether they have interest in the Buddha's teachings or not. What is true is true. So no one to follow, no one to practice. So are you interested in the conditions for the development of samatha? Is that your question?
And is your interest in jhana based on personal experience? So
I just wonder how they can it's a difference between because calmness is calmness, and it's calmness with understanding and calmness without understanding. That is two kind already, but
yes.
That is a sub level of jhana. So what makes it different between the level of jhana?
It's not really relevant
in theory, to
the development of samatha for us, is it?
I raised another question. We are talking about many levels of the calm, right? So, could you please help to elaborate more about the characteristic of the calm? I mean, the status or the, I don't know how to say, but the characteristic of that. We are talking about the reason how it's raised, the calm, right? But what it is?
Yeah, that's a good question. Before going on to that, just briefly, in answer to Sun's question, the difference is the level of understanding in the different levels of jhana. The panya understands more and more the danger of attachment to sense objects. So one by one, certain mental factors don't arise and that kind of thing. But it's the understanding of the level of samatha that is being developed that conditions the progress through the different stages. Getting back to the characteristic of calm, perhaps to start with, we can consider the opposite, that whenever there is unwholesome mental state, there is a degree of restlessness. So it's obvious when there's anxiety or anger that there's a lot of restlessness. It's also apparent that even when there's attachment, there's restlessness, because there's excitement in its strongest form. Is not calm. Not attachment wants either. More, and it won't be satisfied if it doesn't get it. So even when the object is a very pleasant one, like a nice sunset, a nice view, the citta is not calm. There's a little bit of restlessness there. This is absent when...
The citta, not restlessness, right?
Restlessness is a mental factor that arises with the citta.
Because sometimes with attachment or with the ignorance, but we still feel rest, right?
Restful.
In the conventional meaning.
Yes, because there can be neutral feeling.
Could you please elaborate more about the rest? I mean, understand truly about the rest or restless. Yeah, rest.
The feeling can be neutral. There can be attachment with neutral feeling. So we might take that for calmness.
Like Ajahn said before, the characteristic of calmness doesn't appear because there isn't any understanding of it. And when the attachment is not very strong, or when there are many moments of ignorance now, it's completely unknown. So one may think that one feels very calm, but actually it's not understanding anything about calmness. So only when there is understanding of the characteristic and that understanding has developed can anything be known about calmness, the opposite of disturbance or restlessness. And as was discussed earlier, only certain objects can be the object of samatha bhavana, the development of understanding of calm. Flowers cannot be the object of the development of calm, because when one's thinking about the flowers, no conditions for wise reflection with calm, no understanding of how the flowers can condition calm. So flowers is not an object of calm. I mentioned death as an object. Another object is metta. When there is metta, the citta is calm, it's peaceful. So when there is understanding about the quality of metta, the friendliness, the kindness, how it's different from moments of attachment, moments of dosa. When there is dosa, there's no friendliness at all to those around one. And so at those moments, there can be when understanding develops, it can understand how at those moments of metta, the citta is calm, not disturbed at all. So only certain objects can be the object of the development of understanding of calm, of samatha bhavana. And this can be in daily life as well, not by trying to have calm or trying to understand it, but naturally by understanding more about generosity. When generosity has arisen, there can be conditions for more generosity to arise. And there can be understanding that at those moments of generosity, thinking of the other's welfare, the citta is not disturbed at those times.
There are many moments of calm without right understanding, right? But understanding understand calm. Otherwise, it cannot develop calmness at all. That's why the understanding of seeing the danger of akusala in a day, condition that moment to develop more calm, more kusala. Without right understanding, there's no way to have more calm, because in a day there are conditions for akusala. So right understanding knows what is the object of calmness and what are objects of no calm at all. So not all objects can be objects of calmness to develop, because it has to be with right understanding of that object, why and how it can condition more calm. For example, just talk about an object of calmness in order to know that Panya has to understand it, otherwise cannot be more calm. For example, what object? So there can be the studying, understanding how it is the object of calm, not the other object. Not all objects can be object of calmness. The Dhamma. Now, at moment of listening to Dhamma, kusala citta arises. If there is no understanding of that characteristic which is calm, there cannot be more calm. So at moment of calmness, at moment of understanding the teachings anytime, there can be condition for thinking about the virtues of the Buddha. Even the word Dhamma, without his enlightenment, nobody can hear this word at all. By understanding the moment which is calm, with understanding of the teachings, then one knows that at that moment, it's the object of calmness is the Buddha, or it can be the Dhamma, or it can be the Sangha. At moment of seeing the wisdom, the great wisdom of Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, at that moment, it's not just understand what we're talking about, like seeing and hearing, but it depends on how long it will be by conditions, or how much is there by conditions, or how very little. But one begins to know that at that moment, it's the object of calmness to think about the virtues, the great virtues of the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. What else?
So far we've
mentioned death, metta, the virtues of the Buddha, Dhamma. So these are objects of considering with understanding that can condition calm, and can condition calm and wise reflection again and again. It's not the understanding of reality as anatta, but it's the wise reflection that leads to the development of samatha in daily life, not by any method, but just naturally, like now, reflecting on the Buddha's virtues or the quality of metta when there's friendliness to those around, no matter who they are, no matter what their background or interest. So this is how the understanding in samatha bhavana is different from the understanding in vipassana bhavana, even from the very beginning, even from a little consideration.
But the reflection on Dhamma, Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha cannot as deep as the other object, which can condition the moment of jhana. So one has to understand that who can have such a level of samadhi, which is the upajara samadhi, not access.
The Aryan?
Yeah. Yet there are many stages of Samatha Bhavana, starting from Upajara Samadhi.
If we're talking about, for example, the virtues of the Buddha, when it's reflecting on the virtues of the Buddha, it takes contemplation and reflection. So when it is the object of Samatha Bhavana, it cannot be the object of highest development. It cannot be the object of jhana because it takes that kind of reflection. But some other objects, for example, earth, patavi, is an object and it can be the object of jhana. This is very detailed, but it's just the point that some objects cannot be the object of Samatha Bhavana right up to jhana, only to upachara, which is not the same level. So many, many details. But you asked about it.
Enough for today.
And who can attain the level of upachara from reflection on the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha?
The one.
See, different right understanding of reality condition, different level of samadhi.
So for those who haven't heard the Buddha's teachings and haven't developed understanding of the Buddha's teachings, those objects like Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha can't be the object of Samatha Bhavana because there's no knowing about what Dhammas are. But the more understanding there is of Dhamma, then the greater the reflection on the Buddha's qualities or the nature of Dhammas or on what Sangha is, those who have taught and shared about Dhammas. But if one doesn't understand anything about Dhammas, one cannot understand what is Sangha.
So it's very easy to go wrong when some use the word Buddha, 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 and they think that they're practicing or developing Samatha Bhavana. No understanding enough at all, because even Buddha, they don't have any understanding. Yeah, and Samatha Bhavana has to be developed with right understanding. At level of samatha.
Can I just make a comment and ask Ajahn to clarify? When we talk about object here, I think we mean actually subject matter. In Pali, the term is gamatana, a field of work or something like that. The object of the citta is going to be a concept of some kind. For example, when there's metta, the object is a being. But we can't say that beings are a condition for calmness. It's understanding the quality of kindliness or well-wishing towards the other person that is the subject matter of the contemplation.
And the object here is in terms of in concept, in thinking, right? It's only experienced through the mind.
Yes.
The mind all, I mean, right. The thinking.
Yes. Yes, thinking wisely, as Sarah just says.
For generosity, what level it can lead to?
I think only upachara is correct. Generosity can only, because it takes reflection and contemplation, right. And metta.
And death and permanence. How many can take to the...
And there is the difference between dana and jaga. Jaga can be anusati, not dana. It is jaga anusati, namma anusati, and so on. The six anusati. Just to understand the difference between the developing of calmness and right understanding, because the object which conditions calmness is right, the virtues of the Buddha. So only those who understand the virtue of Buddha can reflect on his virtues. So citta is calm and calm and calm according to panya, which understand the virtues of Buddha and the virtues of Dhamma and the virtues of Sangha. So usually Samatha Bhavana has nimitta, not reality as its object. Only few, like the Arupa Jhana, the two are reality, not the Panchati. So in order to see that Samatha Bhavana is not just doing something, it has to be conditioned by right understanding. The person who doesn't have right understanding cannot think, cannot do that which they think is Samatha Bhavana, while it's not Samatha Bhavana at all.